Only a Game is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
In some of the places where Angus Bell was determined to play cricket, the game features a tennis ball covered with tape. In others, the field is a parking lot. And in Poland, some incomprehensible combination of circumstances has dictated that cricket is not played in weather appropriate to the sport, but only in the Polish winter. So it is no wonder that Batting on the Bosporus, a new book by Angus Bell, cataloging his cricket experiences in Eastern Europe, is a bit weird. When we spoke about the book this week, I began by asking Angus to tell me about how his unlikely trip came to be.
Well, this is essentially a book about an 8,000-mile Skoda-powered road trip through the former Soviet bloc. It took me through 17 former Warsaw Pact and Soviet bloc countries like Estonia, all the way down to Serbia and Bosnia, and back up through Ukraine and Belarus, playing the Englishman's game of cricket.
Mm-hmm. And we better go back for just a minute. Skoda, you better explain the vehicle.
A Skoda, well, this is the ultimate Eastern European car. My Skoda was actually a good one, not one of the ones with the papier-mâché walls and the fuel you had to mix by hand. You know, it was a hardy beast that survived jaunts through Bosnian minefields and could survive carjackings. And it could double up as a sandwich bar on the roads, too.
Who would want a carjacking?
A carjacking. Oh, great experience.
How did you go about locating cricket players in these various places in Eastern Europe?
Well, I'll tell you how this all started. It all started here in Montreal, would you believe it, at a psychic exposition. And you know, there were turban seers and crystal balls and workshops and travelling in the astral plane. At the back of this forum, there's a bearded man. He was a dead ringer for George Lucas, a safety goggle salesman by day and a shaman by night who claimed to be channeling messages from the dead. And he pointed at me and said, "Young man with your arms folded, can I give you a message?" I said, "Sure." So he said, "I'm afraid, see, your job here in Montreal is only temporary. You're going to be leaving North America a lot sooner than you think." And this provoked mixed feelings because I just got my first legal job in Canada, and it turned out to be a money laundering organization for the Montreal Mafia, but I kind of wanted to stick it out. But the psychic said, "Pretty soon you're going to be doing a lot of traveling. In fact, it's going to be your job to travel." Mm. I thought that could mean I'd be a pizza delivery boy, but he said, "I don't know what you do in life, but you're going to be putting together a book or a movie." So the psychic's prediction started to come true, and I lost my job and I decided to return to Scotland. Hmm. One day I was sitting in the apartment and the words cricket in Ukraine popped into my head, and I thought, what on earth does cricket in Ukraine mean? So I did a Google, and the search returned a few websites about insects in the Crimea. I thought, no, there's something I have to find. So I plowed through all the pages. Eventually I found a little website about a cricket league at the Odessa State Medical University. They had 16 teams. I thought, psychic, channeling messages about the future, I can kind of understand, but 16 cricket teams at a former USSR medical university? I thought, that's a little strange and a story worth pursuing.
Early on, you conclude, and I'm quoting here, that cricket is a very dangerous pastime. One wouldn't have thought so. How did you come to that conclusion?
Well, I got into many scrapes on this tour. I think the liquor helped. At one point, I became embroiled in a drugs bust on the Midnight Express. Another point, I ended up lost in a Sarajevo graveyard at 2 a.m. with a paranoid Guatemalan anarchist.
One might wonder what all this has to do with cricket.
That's right. Well, this is essentially 95% travel disaster. You probably won't even know anything about cricket by the end of the book.
Well, some interesting terms do surface, but I'm curious about what was your best cricket experience during this tour?
One of the highlights was meeting the Istanbul cricket captain, Mr. Mubashir Khan, and I met him in his little sports shop in Istanbul, and he said to me that baseball bats were one of the biggest sellers in Istanbul, but there was no game there. It was only for beating people. And he was interested in importing cricket bats for the same reason. But he asked me, "My friend, how long are you in Istanbul for?" I said, 3 hours. And he said, "Well, what's your program?" I said, "It's very simple. I just need to get someone to throw the ball at me on the bridge over the Bosphorus, and I'm going to smack them from Europe into Asia." And his face drained of colour when I said this. He said, "My friend, it's not possible because of all the suicides. You're not allowed on the bridge now. There's police everywhere. It would take weeks and special government permission." So Anyway, we set off in the car through the rush hour and we zipped over the Bosphorus. Astonishingly, there were no police there for the first time. There was a little parking bay. So we scuttled along the edge of the bridge, crouched over as though there was a sniper in the girders, and he unleashed the ball and I launched him from one continent to the other.
Everywhere you went, you invited cricket players that you encountered to tell you whatever strange stories they could regarding cricket, and I'll give you the first sentence of one of them and ask you to carry on. I'm quoting again here. It emerged there had been two alleged ex-terrorists without fingers.
This happened in the Czech Republic. There was nothing innocent about Eastern European cricket. A couple of years ago, the Czech team had two former Tamil Tiger terrorists with no fingers. They'd had the middle three cut off on each hand so they couldn't fire rifles anymore. I thought, this is awful. If you're the captain and you have to place them in the field, where do you hide two fielders with no fingers? But astonishingly, one took a catch. He kind of bounced up with his thumbs and clutched it to his chest.
I think it's in Serbia that you begin experiencing, quote, cricket nightmares. I've got to ask you to tell us about the nightmares and then tell me whether you began to think at that point that perhaps cutting the trip short might have been advisable.
That's right. I experience cricket nightmares on a daily basis now, and it all started back at school when I dreamed the England cricket captain had been eaten by a shark at the start of the series against Australia, and I was upset till lunchtime when I realised that it was only a dream and that England would lose anyway. There were several points during the tour where I thought, my goodness, this is pretty dangerous and should I cut it short? I think when I was being pursued by the secret police in Belarus and I was crouching behind a chair, well, this KGB officer marched into the house and started firing questions at my host, and I thought there's something very wrong here. So I repacked all my recording equipment and notes and was hiding there, and I thought at any moment this KGB officer could take two steps forward and find a little Scottish cricketer without a journalist visa hiding behind the settee.
Well, it's interesting that you bring up Belarus because for me, at least, the most tense portion of your book is the one in which you describe trying to get out of Belarus. I gather that you concluded that border guards who didn't understand English would certainly learn to understand it if only you yelled loudly enough and used enough four-letter words.
I love this country. You know, the president, a former collective farmer, got elected with the slogan, you will live poorly, but not for long. And 20 years later, the people of Belarus are still waiting. But to enter that country, it's like sitting all your SATs, applying for a new doctor, changing the address on your driver's license, opening a British bank account, and getting a sex change all in the same day, and it has to be done in Russian.
Well, tell me more about the details, though, because the one thing that seems to characterize Belarus, at least in your book, is there are an infinite number of checkpoints through which one must pass in order to get out.
They forced me to leave by the opposite end of the country, and you only get 48 hours to get in and out. So I was out of petrol, I had no money because of all the police bribes throughout the country. And as I get to the border, the cars and trucks jackknifed across the road in all directions, and every third word is the president's name and being screamed in anger. And so I took all my signed papers to the border, and everyone, all these babushkas with metal teeth and rakes and things on their shoulders, were screaming at me, saying, banker, banker. And they sent me to this bank, which was a hut at the edge of the woods with a boy with a cash box. And unfortunately, there was no cash machine or petrol station for 150 kilometres, and he wanted €1.70 to get this signed chit to get me through the border. And I said, I'm terribly sorry, I don't have any money. And he said, get your family to help you. So I ran back to the car and I scrambled about the floor, found a €2 coin, I was over the moon, got back there, and he shook his head. He said, €2.70. And I thought, there's nothing for it. I'm going to have to stage a hold-up in this bank. So there were hot veins rising from my neck, and I was effing and blinding and screaming. And eventually, the line of terrified customers stumped up the 70 cents. And I said, thank you very much. As though nothing unsavoury had happened. But so I got my signed chit, and I went to got through the border. And I was like, yes, thank goodness. I'm like, oh, no, there's another border. At this one, they wanted $10. They said my road tax had expired in the meantime. I thought, hard enough holding up a bank for 70 cents, but $10.
Well, you did eventually get out. You survived the trip, which was excellent, and odds on that might have seemed long at several points on the journey. Do you feel you did the sport of cricket any good through this travelling?
Well, it was a great way of bringing these countries together. Now, having done the trip, having done the book, there's teams from all over the world coming to play these Eastern European cricketers, so I think it's helped the growth of the sport there.
Now, when you returned home, you did get in touch with, I'm not sure if it was the same psychic or a different psychic.
I tracked this man down again. I felt I had to, you know. You don't want to go against the grain of destiny. So I marched down Boulevard de Maisonneuve to the psychic centre, and then a terrifying thought struck me. I thought, what if after all these efforts, after 2 years of work, 8,000 miles along the road in Eastern Europe, what if he says, man, I was only joking?
One presumes he didn't say that.
He said some alarming things. He started unpacking all these crystals, and I said, well, you know, all I want to do is score 100, and I average 99 this cricket season. When am I going to get that 100? He said, 99? I don't know what that is, but haven't you gone far enough?
And you decided that finally, at least as far as touring unlikely cricket patches, you had.
I think what I realised then and there was that psychics are a lot like crack pushers outside primary schools. They give you that first fix for free, so you come back for more.
Can we expect another book, or have you got that out of your system as well?
Well, after this cricket project, I'd love to go off and explore the outer limits of rugby, like naked rugby in Taiwan and underwater rugby in Norway, gay rugby in Sweden and Denmark. The book will be called Don't Put Your Tackle In Behind.
Angus Bell is the author of Batting on the Bosphorus, a liquor-fueled tour through Eastern Europe, published by Greystone. I'm not kidding. This book is for real. He joined me from the studios of the CBC in Montreal. Angus, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Thanks for having me.
My conversation with Angus Bell about Batting on the Bosphorus, a liquor-fueled cricket tour through Eastern Europe, will be featured on this week's show. I'll also be discussing Manny Ramirez and the first month of the Major League Baseball season with Tim Kirkjian, who may well be ready to back down from some of his preseason predictions. Only a Game's Doug Tribou will have a story about a recent game played under the rules that governed baseball 150 years ago, when nobody had yet thought of the concept of foul territory. And, of course, I'll be updating the results of the most recent games in the NBA and NHL playoffs. So join us, and remember, you can always hear the program at onlyagame.org.